Welcome to Motorcycles and Misfits at the Recycle Garage. So we got a big crew in the house today. Let's do a sound off. This is Liza. We got Douglas.
Yep.
We got Adrian.
Hey.
We got Megan.
Hi.
And we got Maureen.
Hi there.
And we got Miles.
Hey.
Lucas.
That's Gucci.
Mike, a.k.a. Hard Ass.
Howdy.
And Big Jim.
Hi.
So lots to talk about today, but I wanted to start with, well, actually, let's start with what we did today, because we did have some exciting things happen. Adrian, you want to take this one?
So yes, at the end of the last podcast, you heard me fail to start the bike. I have now attached the throttle cables, gave the carburetor some percussive maintenance, and it is now running fine. It's loaded in the truck and ready to go. So I'll be hitting Metcalf next weekend.
Yay! And then you dropped off another bike.
That is also going home with me because it is running. My XR650, bad gas. You know, that was the ultimate. You know, it had spark, it had everything else. It was just bad gas. So I drained it, put new stuff in, and it's running like a champ again. Third kick, I think.
Awesome. And let's see, I put more things back on the what's that thing called? XS750. It's almost ready to try and start the eBay engine that everyone thinks I'm stupid that I haven't tested, but oh well.
Yes.
Nobody said you're stupid, we're just thinking it.
Yeah, you said it, not us.
But the other big news was Jake got the moped running.
Woo!
Put the new coil on, and after Jim and Adrian figured out I had some janky hot wiring going on, it started up and she got to ride it around. You missed it, Megan. It was so cute. She came in here, she was ready to go home, she's taking it home. She's like, okay, thank you. Can I give you a hug? Okay, sure.
She's dope, man.
I'm like, handfuls of tools. Like, okay. So she went and rode that home, and Douglas, you followed her home on the death trap.
Followed her home on the death trap, and it made it fine until her house, and it died right outside of her house. Couldn't get it.
Her problem now.
I think. Oh wait, did you say the moped died or the death trap?
The moped died.
So Liza, was Liza right? Was it just low on gas or?
No, I had gas in it.
Yeah, she filled it up.
Okay.
Well, it was a special blend of gas and oil that we didn't measure. We just kind of put it in. So, who knows?
Problems are getting smaller.
Could be.
She was really excited that it was running, so I would call that success.
I know she seems heartbroken. She's like, can I take it home? I said, well, we really haven't tested it fully. You have no rear light whatsoever. And she was just like, oh.
Can I angelize it, please?
So you got rid of the battery-powered bike light that it came with back a month ago or so?
Well, that was a riot.
No, I said, well, yeah, we really need to, like, figure out why somebody put a battery-powered bike light on and redo the wiring and find a light to put on, and you're going to need a new brake light switch because this is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just get batteries and keep the bike light. I'll just keep the bike light. I said, come on, that's not how we do it here.
As she was riding, too, things started to come loose in the back and, like, dangle. I just kind of burst into laughter and pointed a little bit, and she just waved at me and kept going, so.
Was she looking down the entire time?
No, she was looking up.
Okay, well,
she needs to learn how to use arm signals, though, because she has no blinkers, and I had no idea where she was going.
She was using arm signals.
You were using arm signals.
She was, too.
I didn't see her using.
She did.
Okay.
Well, isn't dangly bits the recycle way?
Sounds about right.
Dangly. So, I wanted to get to our special guest here, Miles. He's from the Give It A Shot Garage up in San Francisco, who has your own YouTube channel. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, I'd call it a web show.
Web show.
Yeah.
That he was listening to us and gave us a shout out and sent me some links to his videos, which are pretty damn funny, and there's nothing like it that I know of. You want to describe what you do?
Yeah, well, thanks. It's cool to be here, actually, because I can't tell you how many times my friends and I have been sitting around in the garage saying, we should start a podcast. We say a bunch of really cool stuff, and then it, you know, never gets too far, but, you know, here I am in a garage talking on a podcast, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, Give It a Shot Garage is just something that we started when my friend, who is a really good bike mechanic, decided to change the brakes on his car, and it took longer than he thought. And he ended up cutting some of his tools in half to make special wrenches and, you know, just yelling and making a mess of things. Not to mention he was on a terrible hangover. And he, you know, in the end, he was like, wow, I actually did that. I'm surprised. I'm proud of myself, even though I looked, you know, that was crazy. But I got it done in the end, and we decided that should be a show. So, you know, it kind of took off from there.
Well, and you apparently have some background in film, so you have like this amazing opening.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. It took a couple takes. The opening's funny because it looks like he's some guy that's there to fix, you know, fix your monster truck or something, like some expert mechanic, and you know, it's that contrast that we find comedy in.
Yeah, we enjoyed him. Megan, what was the thing that drove you crazy in that one video?
Was when he rode away, he rode the bike through a puddle of oil without a helmet on, like down the street.
In the dark.
And I was like, oh no, oh God, is he really doing that? Oh, and
this was after
we cringed a little bit.
Replacing the shifter seal.
Yes, yeah, I cringed.
Long hair, don't care.
Yeah, and you made the point, we are kind of doing the same thing where you're just showing people like, hey, give it a shot, you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it started off because it was really fun to do, and we decided, you know, while making it, like, should this be a comedy show, should this be informative? And we learned quickly that it was a comedy, and it's not very informative, but you know, the responses we got were cool because people were saying, you know, that inspired me to, you know, maybe I can change the tire on my car. Or just, you know, it's all simple stuff, but you know, people liked it, and we kept doing it, and decided that maybe it is a little bit more than a comedy.
Well, who says it can't be both? Who says it can't be both a comedy and informative? You know.
Yeah, I guess you're right, but
because you might have a couple of giggles, right? But if you, at the end of the day, if you still show someone how to change a tire or something, that is what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny though because people have commented on YouTube that. They're like, you know, I was trying to figure out how to actually do this. You know, when you look up some informative video. And they find that, and they're like, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah, there is something about showing them what not to do.
Yeah, but, you know, he does get it done in the end. And that's the important part. And, yeah, you know, he never really screws anything up.
How is that? Because we screw stuff up all the time.
I'm just talking about, like, you know, the brakes work on the car in the end. We changed some bearing support on an old Mercedes, and that was a pretty tough job. And you know, the car goes down the road, it's not broken anymore. And honestly, he does do a good job. These are all our friends' cars and our personal stuff, so we wouldn't let it really go wrong.
So let me ask you this, since you're working on motorcycles and cars, how have you built up your tool collection? What are some of your favorite tools? What are tools you've made to use? That kind of stuff? Because we love tools.
Yeah. I got to say, one of the best things I got for getting rid of stubborn nuts and bolts is this impact driver that works with a hammer. And, you know, that thing has saved me a lot of times. And I think it's like $20 at the hardware store or something.
All right. Yeah, just a good impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use that a lot, too.
It comes up quite a bit.
So have you built up American, metric? Are you getting in all those weird little pullers for steering wheels? You get all these weird tools?
I just kind of have like an old Craftsman toolkit that's been added to as I go along. And, you know, a lot of parts walk away, so I just... Or a lot of tools leave the garage, and as you're probably familiar with. And... you know, I just pick up things here and there. Vice grips, always, you know, like a rubber mallet, stuff like that, clamps. Nothing crazy.
What's your opinion on high-end, like good tools versus cheap tools?
I don't understand that there could be a difference, but I know that there is. Like, I'm saying, like, a cheap tool has the same amount, like a cheap wrench should, I don't know why it doesn't grab the bolt the same as a good wrench would.
Jim, you want to jump in on that one? You must be chomping at the bit on that question.
Yeah, I understand like tolerances and the machining of it and stuff like that, but I just don't know why the cheap wrench can't just be a little tighter.
It is. It's tolerances in the machining. It's the angles. A lot of the higher-end tools guys have spent years and years just figuring out exactly what angle that box is supposed to take off from the rest of the wrench that makes it grip and feel. I have cheap wrenches. I have expensive wrenches. So my expensive wrench sets are $300 for a set of open-end wrenches. Yeah. You know, but the fact is when I leave those at home, and when I need loaners, I take the cheap Husky ones out to the field. There's a place for all of it. Just because a tool is cheap doesn't mean it won't do as good of a job. But I gotta say that the $300 set, they don't cut my hands when I'm yanking on stuff. If you're using them all day long, you know?
I absolutely agree with you. And I get the nice stuff when I can, because it keeps my blood pressure down.
There's some places you should probably invest in right off the bat. One of them would be good torque wrenches.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the kind of stuff that'll bust on you. Another one, it would be a good multimeter. Yep. You can, a bunch of crappy ass multimeters can let you down. You know, so, but there are just the few exceptions I can think of. The rest of the time, a home hobbyist can get away with what they can get at Home Depot. Yeah.
I use a test light a lot more than I thought I would. Once I got one, I'm putting it on everything.
That's a good point, because I haven't picked one up. But I was just looking in my, when we're working on Jake's scooter, trying to figure out if it was the coil. And in a book I have, it told you how to make a coil tester out of one of those testers and a condenser and wire. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe I do need
to bench test your coil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Sometimes in a second, I have a coffee cup amp meter. When I call it a coffee cup amp meter, because I went down to Fry's and I got an amp meter, and it's an open box, and I put some leads on it, and I actually keep it in a coffee cup. And the reason for that is because sometimes during my work, I need two amp meters. I need to measure the current in two spots at one time. So out of my work truck, I grabbed this coffee cup amp meter, and frankly, I think it cost me $10 to build. You know?
Cool.
Yeah.
So, Miles, you told me about a good tool you made in the form of a table, which I'll be honest, I spent a lot of time bending over working on these bikes, and I wish I had the room for a table. But you said you made one that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it's like caveman technology. It's just a table and and some 2x4s and really nothing to it. But it's really changed the way I work in the garage now. I can stand up and just, you know, I could get under the bike easily if I have to. I'm not laying on the ground anymore. And it's just like I'm not getting up to get a tool and laying back down again constantly, which is really nice.
Right.
Yeah. When I go and visit the other garages in the area, you know, there are other garages out there.
Yeah. I mean, this is just some.
This is giving me an evil, evil look.
Yeah. This is just a plywood thing that it sucks. But I, you know, some ratchet straps and some plywood, and you could really, like, I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, working on a lift is wonderful.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't have room to have a lift, but what he's saying is a table. We might be able to build a wooden table that just gets, like, thrown up on the roof or something when not using it. So how high is it?
How do you
it?
Get the bike on the table?
Well, that's good. The next question.
You got to get a couple friends. And then I built a crude wheel chalk, and you know, it stays up there. It fell down on me the other night because I was trying to kickstart the bike. You know. I don't have an electric starter, but
you know. Hold on, I just gotta go through those visuals. You're on the table, kickstarting. You, the bike, and the table go down.
Just me and the bike. The table was under some stress, so one of the legs kind of torqued a little bit. And it was funny because I fell into a pile of drums, like the cartoons and cymbals, like.
and then you came up, and then there was like a drummer under waist.
You know, but it was fine. You know, I left it there all night, and it was cool. But no, seriously, a table really has. I've only had it for the last week, but it's changed the way, like, how happy I am to be around that damn bike. When it breaks down.
You got me thinking, because we could build a table. It could be double as a bench, or it could be hauled outside.
You could use a track table. We used to, when we raced 125s and 250s, the two strokes were really light. you know, bikes, but we had track tables, and they were just fold-up affairs, and they were wide enough so that you could use a rear stand or a front stand on the bike on the table. And they were 18 or 20 inches high with folding legs, and they would hold a few hundred pounds, but I certainly wouldn't trust them with any big bike. But they would fold down flat. You could put them in the back of your truck.
If you're interested.
And yeah. Take them, and a couple of those would come in real handy for all the small stuff you work on around here.
I mean, all right. Yeah. So you'll build us one?
Yeah, give me $15 in 20 minutes.
That's quality right there.
You got to give it a shot.
Is it 2x4 or 4x4 legs?
A little bit of both.
Whatever's laying around.
2x4s, except for the one that buckled, is now a 4x4.
It's 2 2x6s now.
That sounds like a good idea. I want to see that.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like it's what, like 2 feet off the ground, maybe?
Something like that. You know, I didn't have much wood left, so I just divided it up, and that's how tall it was going to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can picture a table, that's what it looks like.
I'm more frightened by that extended front end and the sweet back apes. Is that the rigid you're building?
Yeah.
That raked out front end?
Yeah, my regular bike is a rigid, and then I'm building another one.
Those forks look like, what are they, like 1 1/8 inch thick or something?
They're 39 millimeters, and they're 6 inches over stock.
Oh, man. And that's is a Triumph?
One's a Triumph and one's a shovel head.
Ah, sweet. The shovel head kickstart?
Yeah.
Has it thrown you over the handlebars yet?
I haven't started it yet. I just finished the motor last week.
Oh, you rebuilt the motor too?
Yeah.
Well, how did you get into all this? Have you been?
I mean, it's kind of like
wrenching.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the story. Like a lot of people have the same story. It's like I've always been into cars. Fixing cars because I had to, never really had a good car, and kind of learned that way. And I live in San Francisco now, and cars they take up a lot of space, and bikes have always been cool to me. So I got an old Honda and kind of did the cafe thing with it. And then, I always knew that I liked the old stuff, so I just kind of, you know, stayed there and got into British bikes. And I just like a little bit of everything.
Cool. So have you had any mishaps?
Yeah, I was riding my Triumph to L.A. once, and it was kind of a hasty trip. I wasn't really prepared, and I had a battery that went out, and I had, I decided, I'll put a new battery in. My friend had one, and his bike could run without it, so I took his out, and I tried to wire it into my bike, and I rewired the bike on the side of the road, pretty much. But as I was doing it, I was parked next to a propane tank in a gas station, and this guy was giving me heat. You know, he's like, "You can't work on your bike here. Who are you? Get out of here!" And I was under some pressure, so I was working fast, and I crossed some wires, and they shorted out and started a fire, like,
and propane
like
tank.
right behind the motor, next, and like in a panic, I took the deepest, bong load of like electrical smoke that I could ever think of, and got dizzy, and I was trying to blow out the fire like while inhaling all this electrical smoke.
Oh, God.
And on my sissy bar I had, like, so I'm next to the propane tank, and there's, fire under my gas tank, which I'm not happy about. And then on my sissy bar was like a backpack full of fireworks too. So like,
are you making this shit
no,
up?
I swear, I was going on a trip. I was going down, it was last summer, big camping trip.
Was there a barrel on the back marked TNT?
pretty much, and I was able to, my friend was about to splash the bike with a big cup of Hawaiian Punch, because that's all that we had going, but I was able to blow it out, and I just thought, like, what an ending for a bike, like burn down a gas station and fireworks everywhere. And
at least it would be a fun spectacle.
If that's the way it went, I would be okay with it if I was still living.
It's like a Viking funeral.
Right.
But
I got it out and parked it and let my heart rate drop a little bit.
Down into double digits at least.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of segues into another topic I want to bring up, because you should have had a GoPro with you when this happened. So Lucas here has a GoPro. He has his GoPro on all the time because you never know what's going to happen.
It's Murphy's Law, right? The one time you don't have it is the time when crazy shit goes down. You're like, damn, I wish I brought my GoPro. So I always have it. I always carry two spare batteries. I always, offload all the footage.
And actually, Lucas, this is your idea, so I'll let you take it, but you want to talk about the new camera generation kind of thing?
Yeah, I think this is something we really need to talk about at this point in time, because we're entering an age of where, privacy is kind of being redefined, and speaking of, having cameras on everything, I would prefer to ride everywhere with a GoPro, just because I feel like it keeps me safer. I feel like, in addition to, the fun stuff you can do with it, it kind of is like the same reason why all the Rush people have a dash cam, too.
Hey, Lucas, you can use that. Don't girls also show you your boobs when you wear GoPros?
Oh, yeah. Megan's talking about this one time I got flashed by some chicks in a car.
I guess it's good that digital footage doesn't wear out for you then.
Yeah, that's true. It'll last forever and ever and ever. Right. But I think it's good that we talk about, not just GoPros, but all that sorts of action cameras. Jim was telling you about this thing called Mobius. Mobius camera.
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting. I think, it's becoming part of the public consciousness, these kinds of cameras and their applications. So I think, it's worth talking about.
I can tell you the one time I decided, when I had my Ducati, I wanted to get some footage to show, like, my friends, the Harley gang back in Atlanta. And I literally duct tape one of those VHS cameras.
You put a camcorder on your bike with duct tape.
With duct tape.
Nice.
Yes, I still have the tape somewhere. That's about cutting edge technology that I have. Miles, what kind of camera do you use?
For Give It a Shot Garage?
Yeah.
Canon 5D. So it's a digital SLR. And it's kind of a pain in the ass to use, but it makes a pretty picture. So, and it's all that I have. So there's that.
GoPros aren't really good for, like, shooting movies or anything. I mean, it's an action camera. And the DSLR is not really an action camera at all. So,
where do you mount your GoPro?
I mount my GoPro a few different places.
Your helmet.
Yeah.
I've seen a Teletubby.
Yeah. So,
everyone
does
that.
You just stole my joke. I was about to bring that up every time because I do a lot of dirt riding.
Yeah.
And I see them out there, and every time one goes by with a camera on the top, I can't help but think they look like a Teletubby.
Yeah. They
yeah. look like you know, a I, Teletubby. I found that, like, I tried to mount one on my bike once, and it just, scenic video, I was riding through the desert, and I thought it would be cool, but it just came back so shaky.
The vibration. Yeah.
So I could see where you have to put it on your helmet.
Well,
I've seen them on the side.
I actually just met this guy yesterday. We were hanging at Four Corners in the parking lot, and he shows up, and he has this little rubber thing. I don't know if I still have it. I thought it was just like a safety mount, but he says it inserts inside the clip, and he says that it actually cuts down on the vibrations.
So it's a damper, yeah.
It's just this little rubber piece that you can put in there, and that dampens the vibrations.
I think I have one of those.
I think Doug has one.
It's a little white thing with it's like a ring with a
That's what it is.
A lead will come right. out. You have to show
he says
how that,
to use that dampens it. But
does it work?
You can also just duct tape it to your tank bag.
Yeah.
Well, I usually run my camera like Teletubby. I do that one. Another one I'm really fond of is I do a chin mount, but I kind of have it hanging down a little bit lower than the chin, and it looks really cool in my videos. I have a video of me on my YouTube channel using it, and that one's really cool because you can, like, if you're tucked, you can see through the windscreen, but it also has the ability to just point where you look, which is why you would put it on your helmet. So that one's really cool. I also have a little mount stuck on the top of my tank that when you put it on that, it shoots straight through the dash. That one's pretty good, if a little bit vibratey. Problem with mounting it on your bike is vibrations, and the worst is on the tail or on the bodywork, because that tends to shake the most. But
so I'd like to bring up another possible function of the GoPros, because so many people have GoPros or other type of cameras.
Do so many people really have them? Because people constantly marvel at mine.
Right after Christmas, yes. Lots of people just got them.
Okay.
Because I know, because we were trying to find one for my friend's kid, and they were sold out in Santa Cruz.
No way.
Yeah, I had called Douglas, like, let us know if someone returns one.
2013 is the year of the GoPro, I guess.
So, I think if I put one on, I want to... I want to have a way that you can send the footage to the police when you get assholes on camera.
Well, that I actually just started a thread on Barf on this. I haven't checked it yet, but I asked in the LEO forum, if someone catches you on camera doing something illegal, can they turn you in? Or conversely, if all the people I record on the fucking phone while they're driving, can I send the police that shit and have them get mail tickets? I don't know what they said, but I think, you know, the officer has to be around to see it, so I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah, generally they have to be there to actually witness it.
Yeah.
However, that does bring up the one thing I have seen GoPros is in accidents. Especially when the other party, especially, I know there's one particular case, I can't remember her name, where she was going through LA traffic, the car in the middle lane, for all we can tell in the video, is that they yanked up their e-brake. Because all of a sudden, the rear wheels are locked, they're skidding, they skid into her, send her off the bike. She's okay, but they claim that she was splitting unsafely and slammed into them. And she had the video footage and showed it. It was like, nope, this is what happened. And
that's why I wear mine. Because I'm afraid of shit like that. And we live in the reality where, you know, we're going to be profiled as motorcyclists. The I didn't see him, officer. That kind of shit, that can bite you in the ass, you know. And I'm looking at myself. I'm a 21-year-old dude on a race replica sport bike. They're going to be looking at me as the cause of the accident. So. Well,
there's GoPros, and there's another thing that's coming out that I've seen a couple examples of that I'm really happy to see, or that should be intriguing, is all the quadcopter stuff. So people mounting cameras to quadcopters.
Those are awesome.
In fact, I'm going to plug out a friend. If you go to Multirotor Superstore, they have everything you need for it. In fact, if you ever do a search for Hollister Hills quadcopter, that's his camera work. He's working on doing the sweeping shots. And so if you want any of the aerial camera work, find a friend with a quadcopter.
The really great thing about those quadcopters or drones or whatever is that if you are trying to shoot a film on a budget, you would have to spend a fuck ton of money hiring a fucking crane to do that shit.
Or an actual helicopter.
Yeah, before the invention of these. And now, I mean, you can just spend a few $100 on a little thing that flies around, and you can get the same footage, you know? And I think that's awesome. I mean, I'm a film student. I would be super down to be able to use one of those, because it gets the shot. It does it, and it's real cheap. So I think those are awesome. That's another advantage of having action cameras.
Yeah, I think they're a really cool thing. I mean, with the birth of YouTube, I mean, that's where you have your channel. Well, do you get traffic through a website too, or is everything through YouTube?
No, that's it.
So, how are you getting people to see your videos?
Just the world of social media.
Yeah.
I guess, Facebook, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, we need to use our camera more, but I'm still trying to... What?
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
Liza, you need to learn how to turn the video to photo, because my laptop is full of photos of you thinking you're taking a video.
Yeah. Yeah. On the GoPro.
Nothing is on it. Or it's just your face.
Yeah, so what she's making fun of is when we were at the Dirtbag Challenge, and I thought it'd be really cool to set up the GoPro and the mini bike and send people out through the crowds. So I kept reaching down and turning on the video. Apparently I was turning on the camera. So there's a lot of pictures of me turning the camera on and off.
And your hand is in the photo.
Yeah, a lot of GoPro videos start out with someone's face looking really confused.
Yeah.
So I think that the application for this technology might be from the RC world. I know that currently there's a $69 1080p camera you can buy. You can mount it on your bike, and the great thing about it is that it's auto on and off and auto loop record.
This is the Mobius, right?
Mobius, it's like $69. It's kind of an open source in development. It's very, very popular on the guys with the quadcopters, the RC stuff. And that's probably the direction technology that might be really kind of cheap for everybody. You know, because like I said, the thing about the GoPro is that you, or the Contour or any of those, it's great to have it looking where you're looking so you can catch like bad behavior. But my problem is, I got two different cell phones. I got all this technology going. I have a hard time tracking what I've got. I think that that might be a good solution for me on my bikes because it'll turn on when I turn the key on. I'll never have to change the memory. It'll override itself. It'll turn off when I turn the key off. And then if something does happen, I can retrieve the camera. Right? And so that's a cheap, effective solution to go after that versus having to manage these cameras and all this data and erase and download, etc.
It's like fire and forget.
Well, we'll be looking to the, so let's keep an eye on the RC crowd because they're the people who are developing this technology. They want all the same things. They want it to turn on with their little helicopters. They want it really light. They want it really cheap. They want batteries that weigh nothing and last forever. So I'm going to keep my eye towards those guys as they develop this and then just, you know, steal it and put it on my bike.
Yeah, because once they advertise it as a motorcycle-oriented thing, they're going to charge you more money.
That's right. So. That's right. It's like stamping marine on something. You put it on a boat, it costs four times as much for the same thing.
Yeah. There you go.
So, Miles, you're not really using your GoPro much or using footage. Can you think of other reasons or new doors that are going to open because of all these?
Porn.
What? Well.
Wouldn't that be action porn?
Porn from above?
Yeah,
porn. Action porn.
No, quadcopter porn. Honestly, haven't thought about it. I've seen a lot of cool stuff with the GoPro cameras, though, but. You know, nothing super, like, nothing. I've never thought about it, to be honest with you.
Because you have a good camera.
I know, I'm one of those fancy GoPro people. Well, at least I'm laying under a car with it, getting dirt, you know, shot all over it instead of being fancy with it. I'm actually using the thing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
so
I use it.
I want to take a moment, hear a word from our sponsor, Moto Bandito.
Have you ever wanted to mix the two things you love the most, your motorcycle and sex? Do you find it hard to mix your riding life and your sex life? Have you ever wanted to have sex with your bike or include it in your sex play? Well, now you can. Introducing the Moto Bandito Moto Sexual 2-in-1 Tool and Toy Bag. It's everything you need for a roadside breakdown or get down. This amazing dual-purpose package comes in a handy tank bag for use on the road and off. Accessories include dildo-shaped hand grips, exhaust tip fleshlight attachment, seat-mounted strap-on dildo ergonomically crafted to improve your riding posture, fringe vinyl catsuit tracksuit, helmet strap ball gag, nipple clamp jumper cables, dual-purpose silicone chain lube, replacement gasket cock rings, tire plug urethral sounds, emergency coolant enema kit, a fleece-lined GIMP mask to help keep you warm in the winter, and our intro to anal breakdown flare kit. Order now and we'll throw in our patented butt plug screwdriver with interchangeable heads and bits. And for you off-road enthusiasts who've been bad boys, do we have a treat for you? A spanking paddle tire. Go to motobandito.com. That's Moto B-A-N-D-I-D-O. And don't forget to get off the bike before you get off on the bike.
And we're back. So that segued well from the porn for cameras.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Meant to do that.
That's the one you're going to use, then yes. Hey, I wanted to real quick... read an email and give an update. I'll start with the update. I didn't tell you this, Douglas, but we had a conversation a couple podcasts ago about should the dealers be responsible for squids coming in and buying bikes
and then crashing them in the parking lot.
what's a squid?
Good question. Who knows what it stands
Ask
for?
Lucas.
Yeah, why don't you? Oh, you should ask me because of the guy I sold my last bike to.
Right.
Squid. There are a bunch of definitions floating around, but the one I've heard most prevalently is that it started out with the SoCal racers, and it was like a contraction of squirrely kid. And basically, now in our common vernacular, it just means like anybody who is an underdressed and or reckless and or incompetent and shitty rider. So it's kind of like a blanket term. You can just be like, look at that fucking squid,
with
right?
With the extended fork Hayabusa.
Yeah. Hayabusa, chromed out extended swing arm. Swing arm. That's a squid.
I thought it was from the goo they leave on the freeway when they go sliding.
I'll do it too.
Or well, some people also say it stands for stupid, quick, underdressed, imminently dead.
So
you guys are talking about me.
We can read it out of the Urban Dictionary.
Yeah.
Watch the video on the Urban Dictionary page. It's fucking funny.
Squid, a young motorcyclist who overestimates his abilities, boasts of his riding skills when in reality he has none. Squid bikes are usually decorated with chrome and various anodized bits. Rear tires are too wide for their own good, swing arm extended. Really slow in the corners, and sudden bursts of acceleration when a straight appears. Squids wear no protection, deeming themselves invincible.
I don't plan on crashing.
This fact compounds itself with the fact that they engage in extreme riding, performing wheelies and stoppies in public areas. Squids wreck a lot, derived from Squirrely Kid.
Okay, so, the historic one that I've heard is actually that came across from the Navy. That's down in Southern California, which is correct. That is where the term sort of originated from what I've heard. That squid or squibby is a naval term for a young sailor. And you'd have these young sailors out on sail, and they'd be building up their pay. They'd hit shore with a huge amount of money, quote-unquote, in their bank, and they'd go to a motorcycle store and buy these insanely fast bikes because, well, they're young and stupid. So they'd buy the leader bikes, go out and crash them in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then the Navy would be responsible for their, you know, paying for insurance, paying for their healthcare, etc. So the term squibby translated into the motorcycle community as squid because, you know, these are the young sailors who are being complete assholes who then go crash and provide a wonderful spare part market.
if you want to buy a wrecked bike, thanks squids.
My friends and I talk about this a lot because we're all, you know, like, we all think about the reality of it, like, you know, it's dangerous out there, and but like we're like, you know, where are these crash statistics coming from? Are they these assholes flying by me on the freeway doing a wheelie, or is it like the old timers who have been alive forever? Like, you know, I think it's like a lot of it is coming from these, you know, squids.
Yes.
As you call it, you know, like,
I'd say they make up most of it, if not like the overwhelming majority.
They do make up a large percentage of it, but there's also another one that brings up. You mentioned the old timers. There's a decent amount that are people who used to ride and rode 20 years ago.
Right.
And they go out, midlife crisis, they go out, get another bike, and bike technology has changed a little bit in the last 25, 30 years.
Right.
So they go out and get a bike that, yeah, maybe they could have handled 20 years ago. They can't handle now. They go out and ride like they used to as a kid and then crash.
Yeah. I mean, new bikes are just so damn fast. I can't imagine they'd be any fun to ride the speed limit.
They're not.
So the update I wanted to give, I may or may not have been at a dealership and may or may not have been inquiring about a Grom. And I was talking to Matt up at the Fremont Cycles, and we were just talking about smaller bikes, bigger bikes, new riders, kind of conversations we have here, and asked him, you know, if he'd encountered stuff like that, and he told me that, not at that dealership, but another one he worked at, a kid came in, had just gotten his license.
Was it a license or permit?
Well, he had taken the class.
Oh, so he just got
motorcycle safety class.
He got his learner's permit.
He went to the dealership to buy a Hayabusa. And Matt
this'll end well.
Said, you know what? No, I'm not going to sell it to you. Mm-hmm. And tried to steer him onto some smaller, more appropriate bikes.
How did that end up, though?
The kid then went to the owners of the dealership and complained about him.
That's what I thought would happen.
And the owner said, you know what? We're going to go with him on this one. You should not be on a Hayabusa. And they backed him up. So I thought that was really good. Cool to hear that.
That is cool.
Yeah.
There is somebody who... I just like at a bar, I think, you know, the bartender should cut people off when they're too drunk.
Yeah.
I think that dealerships should have some responsibility. So I wanted to give that update that I found somebody who did that.
Yeah, I think that's good because they gain a reputation as being, like, honest people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know there is certain shops that I won't mention that are completely known for doing the exact opposite. An acquaintance of mine was told, oh, no, you don't need that leader bike. You need a Hayabusa. I was just like, wait. Okay, the ZX10 is too small for you, and you've been riding for 6 months. So you went and got a Hayabusa instead.
Yeah. So I wanted to support. That's why I said Matt up at Fremont Cycle. He's a cool guy, and he did the right thing.
Well, I think it's really cool that the owners backed him up, because I feel like we live in a world where the customer's always right. So I figured if someone did that, you know, he'd get written up. Owners would be like, what the hell are you doing? He wants the bike, sell it to him. So it's good to hear that that actually is true.
Right. And then I wanted to give a shout out to Steve Hoffert. He sent us an email saying that he found our podcast. He really likes it. He wrenches on bikes from 50 to 1500 cc's. He's done a lot of cool things with GLs. And he does custom, like, C70s. Like passports, he's done some really cool stuff with those, and he jumped in on the right bike, wrong bike, small bike, big bike debate, and just said that, you know, he disagrees with me a little bit that you can have just as much fun flogging a little bike as you can you know, one of the big bikes.
Well, fun is all relative to the rider too.
Right. Well, you know what they say, like,
for fun. So
you know they say riding a slow bike fast is a lot more fun than riding a fast bike slow. Riding a fast bike slow is fucking frustrating. So
well, yeah, I'm still exploring the world. And, like, there was an interesting bike up there I saw. It was a Suzuki. I think it's called a GW250. It's just a street bike. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, I've been poo-pooing, like, the Ninja 250s as being the only beginner bike. But now it's like, well, there are, like, this GW250 is kind of a cool-looking street bike. Maybe it's not as bad. I mean,
is that the new one?
It is a brand-new bike.
Yeah. Okay. I read about it on Barf or something. So.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I want to take this opportunity now. Let's jump to Megan's Craigslist porn pick of the week.
Hi, all. So I had a hard time finding stuff this week. There just wasn't a lot of good stuff out there. But I did come across a bright yellow Ninja 250 for $500. Beginner bike.
I don't recommend Ninja 250s.
I recommend them.
Salvage title. Registration was not renewed in 2013, so you'd have a year of back reg, which isn't that bad.
Well, for the price, 12,000
miles. And 12,000 miles. Beater bike, it's been street fightered, which it looks really lame with the Ninja 250s, but whatever. And they said it run, not currently running, but the carbs just need to be cleaned. It has ran in the past. I just don't think they want it anymore. It's a beater bike, but hey, if you're going to crash your first bike, you might as well crash a beater bike. So, and for $500.
You can crash one that's been crashed already.
Yeah, why not? So.
Don't get a nice bike.
Yeah, don't get a nice bike.
We've talked about this. Don't get a nice bike.
Pass it around if anyone wants to see it, but.
I want
to
see this.
And I'm sure. Yeah,
see,
because
one Ninja 250.
Yeah. And I'm sure you could talk them down. if it's not registered and it's a salvage title, I'm sure you could. You know, do the, hey, only brought $400.
Yeah,
I'll take,
$400.
Yeah. So, that's
Megan, when you said it was Street Fightered, I envisioned it being a lot worse than it looks. It actually looks pretty
look
good.
Well, it's just missing its front fairing.
It just doesn't have the lower and front fairing. So.
Which is what I was trying to get you to do with yours, because you were sending it all the time. And I was like, just chuck it and
that.
Street Fighter it.
No,
but,
everything was there. You can't.
No,
fair enough. It looks nice now. I mean, the Megan's looks nice
Yeah,
now,
you know, but. If you're looking for a first bike, I'd buy it.
Yeah, I think that is a good price. I mean, buying a Ninja 250 new or close to new, you can spend a lot of money and you're probably going to crash it.
And they have so many, because, like, you know, they're quote unquote a beginner bike. There's so many guys who had one and they're quote unquote outgrowing it and they're ready to dump it for, you know, a pretty cheap price. You can have them for pretty cheap.
Yeah, I agree. And go ahead.
Yeah, and in 10 years they'll regret selling that 250.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they'll get really good, and then they'll be like, "Now I have all these fast bikes, but I can't ride them fast."
You know? I think that outside of the ones that have been crashed several times or out of reg and needs their carb cleaned, actually Ninja 250s probably hold a reasonable value because there's a whole fresh crop of brand new people who are being told that they need to buy the Ninja 250 as their first bike. So everybody's looking for a deal.
Get one
too.
Now because the price is going to go up.
Well, you know, so there's a lot of good, you know, there's a good resale value if you get a good condition one and you're like the second owner. You'll probably be able to pass it on in a year for a relative without taking too much of a bath.
Yeah.
Hey, Maureen, maybe this is a good bike for you.
Yeah, I would totally ride that.
Yeah, I mean, Ninja 250 for $500.
$500.
I know. Well, the only thing... The only flag that I get on this is the not currently running, but think the carbs just need to get cleaned.
Right. What if they're just wrong?
You don't need a carb clean after 12,000 miles.
Yeah.
It's been sitting or
well,
something.
It didn't do the registration, so it's been sitting for a year. That probably means you need a new battery. You can let it sit for a year, and you may not have to clean the carbs on it.
Depends if there's good gas, bad gas.
But yeah, after a year, you can easily get bad gas just sitting there.
Yeah.
What if that's all it is? What if they just can't start it because the gas is bad?
Well, actually, this is going to segue into the next topic I wanted to bring up, especially with Miles here, because he, like us, is finding cheap or free bikes all the time. And this is great opportunities on something on Craigslist where you get somebody has it not running and they don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Either they know why and they're lying because it needs a complete engine rebuild and they're just going to say, well, not sure. But 90% of the time, they have no idea and they don't want to deal with it and you're getting a simple fix. Would you guys agree with that?
I would say that that's most of the time,
like
but
89% maybe.
Yeah, there's still a gamble involved because you have to evaluate the situation if it's a newer bike and it's not running like this one. You know, it's probably something simple, right? But if it's an older bike or if it's got a lot of miles, like it could be anything. So take your chances, right?
So Lucas, you're the kind of guy who probably doesn't want to pick up a free bike and spend a lot of time working on it.
No. What I do is I just buy bikes and then I sell them for like the same price.
To squids, yes.
Yeah.
But and Jim, do you buy beaters or you only like nice bikes now? Are you spoiled rotten now with your new Ducati for Christmas?
Yeah, Santa Claus was very nice to me. No, I appreciate projects. Like the M900, it was a first year. It was rotting in a carport. The clutch was trashed. There was all kinds of rust on it. I appreciate select projects to sort of bring back to life. And I think I bought a Ducati M900 for, $2,200? It was one of those things where he couldn't quite figure out exactly why it wasn't running right. Really, the guy just didn't ride it enough, if you ask me. It just sat too much. But no, deals are had out there. They can be done. You can get stuff. But I think we also got to back up on the $500, dollar Ninja and say, yeah, it's a $500 Ninja. Yeah, it's probably a simple fix. But with anything like that, we're going to need a new battery, all new fluids, all new filters, a new set of rubber, and we're going to have to square up the legality on it and be aware that there might be a few additional issues. So the $500 bike is a $1,200 bike or a $1,400 bike. Yeah. So let's just make sure we keep our eyes wide open. You know,
don't get suckered in by the low price. You
right.
You could end up biting you in the ass.
Right.
So, Miles, you said you don't trust that a $500 bike is gonna go up. Where do you find your deals, and have you had a good deal, or have they all you had to pay in the end?
Yeah, I've just been surprised before. You know, people want to sell something, so they say it's better than it is, and especially in my naivety. How do you say that?
Naivete.
Yeah, like when I was first starting to mess with bikes, you know, I fell for some stuff that I was like, oh yeah, it'll be running in a month, no problem, and that was giving myself a lot of time to get it done. And sure enough, it takes a year.
Right.
But
you don't know anything.
I don't
about
know.
That.
My buddy scored a. I just met a girl one night who had a bike for sale. And, I went and checked it out. She saw my bikes and was like, yeah, I don't want this thing anymore. And it was a 71 CB350. And the thing was really clean. And she's like, I only want, give me like $400 for it. You know, the transmission's messed up or something like that. And
did you know what that meant at the time?
No.
Okay.
No, I really didn't. And I went and checked it out. And all that it was, we got it out of her garage. And all that it was like... the first gear was being blocked by the exhaust pipe, so you couldn't go down.
Oh, on the shifter.
Yeah, on the shifter.
Got it.
And the clutch was a little out of adjustment, so the Kickstarter wouldn't really engage the motor. But we had the thing running in like 3 or 4 hours, and that's after pushing it home too. And my friend who paid for it called the girl back and was like, I really feel like I gave you too much, or I didn't give you enough money for this bike. The transmission's fine. And You know, I know you don't like these words, Liza, but it was like, good karma, you know.
Karma's okay, just not chakra.
Right. But yeah, you know, it was a good deal, and I think it worked out well for both people. She got the broken down bike out of her house, and my friend got a great deal and doesn't have to feel guilty about it.
So what other deals have you found, or where were your best sources for it?
I think just like anyone else, Craigslist. Sometimes a friend has something. Picked up a couple free bikes from friends who, you know, the bike doesn't have a title or something like that. And
oh, right. So you said you have pretty good luck with getting bikes titled. What's your mojo? What are you, your method?
I just do the stuff you're supposed to do. And I guess the CHP VIN verification process in San Francisco is pretty casual. They just come out and check the engine number and the frame number, and they write a new title for it, and that's that.
So you're talking when a bike has been out of the system?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our DMV will check the VIN if it's out of the system.
I thought that, like, totally drops off the radar after 7 years or so.
It does, and you fill out an affidavit saying you've owned it all along.
I've noticed, you know, it doesn't ever come up, like, when I get pulled over. The cops never run me. They just, something about bikes, they just... You know, I'm not superstitious, so I'll say it, but I've had a lot of good luck with it, and you know, it's been cool. They don't ask me anything besides, like, you know, why don't you have a taillight?
Right. I will say that's something I look for on Craigslist. If they say out of reg or not in the system, and to a lot of people that's like, oh, stay away from that.
Yeah.
Well, once you learn the system, you realize that's a bonus.
Right.
Yeah.
That's yeah, like then you don't go to the DMV and find out you owe $630 in back reg.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so...
Is that the ninja?
But the bike was free.
The bike was free.
The bike was free with a $630 surcharge.
Say that the bike's been crushed or parted out, and so the title goes away and get a new one?
The DMV lady was such a bitch. I walked out of there in tears. I was so upset.
The next dude.
The Douglas fig... I was in one line, he was in the other, and the guy that Doug got it down to $220, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He basically just waived all the late fees. Yeah. We only paid for the last 3 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And all the late fees, which was like $400.
And, you know, it's a little frustrating. It's frustrating because there isn't a standard. Like, you know,
it's
never
just
know.
Just however that person feels
exactly.
that day.
Exactly. And that's what's the most frustrating
thing. Yeah, and Megan got the bitchy lady, and she didn't get nothing.
The people at the
never
DMV.
Get the lady that wore the pink shirt. She's Hispanic with long hair, and she wears hot pink every time I'm in there. Never get her.
Okay, I'll make sure and avoid that. So, Miles, if you don't know, and for anyone else, that's another thing. When it has no paperwork, that can be a blessing. It can be a curse.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I do is get the VIN number and either call the DMV or there. I think you can actually go onto the DMV site, type in the VIN number, and it won't give you the owner's information, but it will tell you if there's any registration or fees owed.
Yeah, you can check back reg. I think they have a special page for that, too.
Right.
Back reg fees are always an stolen. Estimate.
Yeah.
Good point. I don't know. I think that's police. I don't know if that's in DMV. But if you so you get the VIN number, you type it in. If it says it doesn't exist, that is the best thing. You won the lottery. That means you can go down to the DMV and sign an affidavit saying it's your bike. Of course it's your bike. It's been your bike all along. Mm-hmm. You just went away to college and stored it in your parents' garage, and now you're here to re-register it.
Yeah.
I think a better way, though, would be to actually call them and give them the VIN number over the phone, because I typed in the VIN number for the EX500 and it said it didn't exist either. And then I went and
you can
it
get someone
did.
On the phone from the DMV.
Yeah,
you just have to wait 3 weeks.
They have a callback system now.
Really?
Yeah, they do
I tried
have a callback
once
system.
And they're like, there was no option to talk to anybody.
Well, I used to just hit zero over and over and
mash,
over.
Mash
and it used to finally, it would say, oh, right, all right, I'll send you to a operator now, you know? But now they have the callback system and it worked, dude. I used it the other day.
Totally works.
Yeah, they actually, you just leave your number and they call you back. But have you run into bikes that were not out of the system that were still in the system?
No.
So you don't know of this phenomenon?
No, you know, every bike I've picked up has just been, you know, I risk run it, or I just, you know, it doesn't have a title. It comes from someone's barn or something like that, you know, and there's no paperwork.
So our advice, because we run into this all the time, because we get bikes given to us, or we've gotten bikes off of Craigslist for free or cheap.
Right.
If it does owe, and what Douglas was explaining, you may find out it owes $400, $500, $600, $800. It's crazy.
Yeah.
How much they charge. That's how much they'll tell you. But the reality is they have the ability to remove penalties. You are responsible for paying back registration, which may be what, like, cheap. It's what?
It's like $50 a year.
$50 a year or something, right? It's not that much.
Yeah, because I have a vanity plate, but.
But then they throw in all these penalties and stuff. And I have gone to the DMV and said, please show me in your book where it says I'm responsible for paying the last person's fees. And we actually have printed out somewhere. Actually,
I have it on my computer.
In the book, it says that you actually cannot be held responsible for the last person's
late fees.
Late fees.
But that won't stop them from charging you anyway.
They will
be careful.
They will tell you you have to pay it.
Don't pay it.
But it's actually a gray area. And sometimes you'll get somebody who's generous and will offer to remove them without asking.
Just keep doing it over and over again. If they say no, keep doing it until you get someone else.
I've actually gone to a DMV and told I had to pay $700, and then I walked out, drove to the next DMV in the next town, and they went, ooh, this can't be right, and they reduced it to $180. Just because they were just being nice.
Yeah. Maybe they had a bike.
I had some really bad late fees on my car or something.
Douglas shows him his pecker, and he gets his
And the guy was basically like, so you couldn't pay it because, I'm like, I just didn't. And he's like, you mean you didn't have any money, right? Wink, wink. I'm like, yes, yes, I didn't have the money to do it. And he's like, okay, that's what I needed to hear. So they, yeah.
Good enough for me.
They've always been so cool.
In the worst case scenario.
Sorry for everybody who's had a bad time there. I just never have.
Can you just, you know, take something like a bike that has a bunch of fines on that frame and, you know, put it in a different frame that's out of the system and re-register it that way?
You could.
You know, just so you have different serial numbers. It's a case where, you know, regulations make weasels out of people, but it works.
I can tell you that I have a friend who bought a bike in another state and rode it here to California and then lost the paperwork. And instead of trying to find the original owners because she just didn't want to deal, she got somebody who had the same model bike, but they had theirs was a basket case. So she took over their registration.
Yeah.
Which then bit her in the ass because now she has to, she let it lapse and she needs to go in, I think, and have it inspected. This is that, remember the police bike?
Yeah.
And she has to go in and have it inspected. And she can't now because nothing's going to match.
Mm-hmm.
So then she's like, oh, I'll just sell it on Craigslist. I said, you can't. You're just passing your problem on to somebody else. That's not very cool.
Yeah.
But not that I condone it or have tried it. Mm-hmm. But I have heard of there being places that will sell you a title. For instance, I have seen on eBay, somebody may be selling a frame with a title.
Mm.
Yeah.
How many people are really shopping for a frame as opposed to how many people just need a title?
Yeah, I've heard it all the time. You know, they have a bike without the frame, or they have like a track bike with a duplicate frame and they want to make it street legal or something like that, you know. I mean, there's a big market in people selling just frames, and a lot of the stolen bikes end up being sold just as frames for titles. So, you know. Or they wouldn't because they're stolen.
That was wrong, yes.
Stupid. No, but a lot of people will part out bikes and they'll just sell the frame with the title so that people can register another bike that doesn't have a frame with the title.
Right, they recognize there is more value in the title than there is the frame, but they will just sell the two. I don't really recommend it because I think it can get you into trouble in the end. If you get towed, they check everything and you cannot claim that vehicle. You have your registration and it does not match the VINs on the bike, you're screwed.
Why wouldn't it match though? Because the title goes with the VIN on the frame.
No, you're not switching out the frame.
Oh, right.
You're just using that title to get registration for a bike that matches your description.
Yeah, if they ever check, your bike will be towed slash confiscated. So
if you get pulled over...
And that's really expensive. It's not worth it.
Yeah, if you get pulled over for speeding or something, they're just going to look at your plate. They're not going to match your numbers on the frame or engine. But if you get towed or have to, for whatever reason, get it, if you get in an accident or something like that, have to deal with an insurance company, lots of reasons.
And then if you get to sell the bike... It's just as bad for the next person.
Exactly.
If you unknowingly buy it like that, and then they're going to get fucked too.
That's why I didn't approve of my friend just passing the problem on to someone else. I don't approve of that. But then again, I also don't approve of the DMV raping us anally with their fees and such. It's a double-edged sword because on the one hand, you can take a bike that's out of the system and they don't give a flying fuck. You just say, yes, it's mine. Here, I signed a yellow piece of paper. It says so. And they go, okay. On the other hand, if it owes $700 back roads, you'll get someone go, no, you have to pay. But that's more than what the bike is worth.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't give a shit about that either. So.
DMV doesn't give a shit about anything, dude.
What are you pointing out to me, Douglas?
It's 58
that we're
minutes.
Almost at an hour. I know. That's why I'm just...
Well, it's not like we have to fill a time slot.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm watching the time. I know we're getting about an hour. And I know that Miles and Maureen have to drive back to the city.
We got headlights.
Yeah, whatever. Awesome. So, does anyone else have any tips or bits about finding good deals? I would say, like, the flag, when people say they're not sure what's wrong, sometimes they do know what's wrong and you need to dig a little bit more.
If you go look at a bike, always bring a battery and some jumper cables with you.
Yeah.
That's what we did when we bought your CB400, because it was not running either, or CM400.
When I bought my F3, the battery wasn't working either, and I was too stupid to know the battery was dead, so I bought it.
We hooked up the bike, and everything worked, so we were really confident buying the bike. Even though it didn't run,
and
all the lights
mine had the kickstart, too, so you were able to test the engine to see if the engine, you know, if everything would turn over, and
I feel like if you're looking at a used bike and it has some really, like, real, like, wanky mods to it, like, that can give you a clue to, like, how accurate
kind of
the description is. You know, just, like...
You duct know, tape.
Or, you know...
That's
tape,
a warning
duct
sign.
Tape is not a mod.
Hey, I've got safety wire holding mine together. It's okay.
Safety wire is a perfectly acceptable repair.
You know...
So, what kind of things are you talking about, Miles?
Well, I'm just talking about, like, you know, if someone's got, like, a bike that's completely stock and maybe they've changed the handlebars or put some stickers on the tank... They've never, you know, gone into that bike. It's safe to assume, and their description may not be that accurate when they're talking about the motor.
Yeah, one thing that always gets me with people selling bikes is they list out all the mods that they've done to it, and then expect to actually get something for all those mods.
Right. They basically expect you to pay the equivalent of like retail price for all of them.
Or they'll say they have $25,000
invested in this bike. Make me an offer.
Have it for $5.
Yeah.
You're like, bullshit.
I don't care how much you put in it, dog. It's worth $5.
None.
Or just because they changed the handlebars doesn't necessarily make it a cafe racer.
Right.
Yeah.
Non-running bikes with heavily mods are actually. The last one that I bought was a very good investment. So it was a DRZ 400. It just didn't run. It sat. It didn't run. So I got, $2,000 for it. Well, the fact is it had a YZF 250 front end, Excel rims with Talon hubs, a $1,000 Ohlins rear shock, an FMF, power bomb muffler, a special Attack Racing top triple clamp. I mean, this thing has, it was done to the nines. Then I turned around and sold the motor for $500, which didn't run anyways. It turned out to be a simple problem. The other parts and sundries for another $500. Now I've got like $3,000 in add-ons that I got for a third of the price. In excellent condition. So that's another kind of way to work a deal.
Right? It can go both ways.
It takes, you have to have a good, I guess what I'm saying is you have to have a good knowledge of what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And if you don't, take a friend.
Take a friend.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I guess what I was trying to say is take a look at the condition of like the work that's been done to it.
I would say signs I look for are things that are in disrepair, like the tires.
Right.
If somebody is running on bald tires, then you should expect that they haven't been changing the oil, and they haven't been doing other maintenance.
Or if they have like spiky bar ends, or like,
yours?
Or they have, instead of rear passenger pegs, they have foot pegs.
Or skeleton hand mirrors. You know?
Yeah,
oh,
shit
God,
like that.
Don't
and you're,
get
and
started.
You're just,
anything,
skeleton key and everything.
Anything that leads you to believe the guy owning the bike is a squid. Like, like huge pancake sprocket. Nope.
Symptoms of squids. Lucas, that can be a segment.
So, but I mean, just like Jim's saying, if you know what you're looking for, you can get a lot of good money out of it. It's just like some people slap on aftermarket exhaust and then add like $1,100 to the price, and you're like, no. You know?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you feel like if the bike said on Kelly Blue Book it was $5, and then they put on $1,200 exhaust and they add $300, I'd say that's a good deal. So, you know.
Well, if you would like to know if we think a potential bike is a good deal, here's how to contact us.
Because Liza can't get it right.
It's only been 4
okay.
months.
On Facebook, it's Recycle Santa Cruz. Our website is motorcyclesandmisfits.com. You can email us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com. And we're also on iTunes, so please like us there and rate us on iTunes.
Yes, please do. Thank you, Megan. So I wanted to thank everyone for coming out, everyone for listening, especially Miles and Maureen for hanging out.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
And again, check out his Give It a Shot Garage on YouTube. And thanks for listening. This is Liza.
Doug.
Adrian.
Megan.
Maureen.
Miles.
Lucas.
Mike.
Jim.
And we're out. Thanks.
Cool.